Hello, and welcome back to the Pandemic Pastoral Podcast, and to a very special collaborative edition whereby Alex and I, Rob, who are the usual hosts, are actually guests of another podcast, the Reality Bites Parenting Podcast. So you're getting something a little bit different today in this week's episodes, but we'll be talking about kids' mental health, parents' mental health during lockdown, as well as, you know, some pretty standard shenanigans as we usually do. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
So we're in with another episode, and we are with our Parenting Reality Bites podcast team, minus two, plus two. We're short Paula and Grace. Grace, who has moved on, doesn't love us anymore. I'm going to throw her under the bus. I hope she's listening. No, she's gone to a great church. And she's being blessed there, and I know she's going to be a blessing. I feel like we need to play some Last Stand music for her. There we go. Alex is doing a great job. With me today, we've got the Pandemic Podcast crew, Rob and Alex. Why don't we go around, introduce ourselves a little, and whilst we're doing that, I'm looking for a name for a duck. If you had a duck, what would its name be? Rob.
Hi, I'm Rob. I am one of the ministers at Ann Arbor Baptist Church, as well as one of the two hosts of the Pandemic Pastoral Podcast. And if I had a duck, it would depend on the kind of duck. If it was a green, blue, and white kind of fancy special duck, I'd call them Humphrey, because I've pretty much already named all of those ducks Humphrey, because it's just such a cool name for a duck. If it was like a regular duck that like was like white or yellow or whatever other color that is fairly bog standard for ducks, then maybe I'd come up with a different name. Yeah, that's a good question, really. Let's call him Norbert.
Norbert. We took a lot of time thinking about that.
Yeah, why not?
Over to you, Alex.
Well, I'm Alex, and if I had a duck, I'd want to call it Duck Vader. You know, I'd like to keep the Star Wars fandom going strong, because Duck Vader sounds like an intimidating duck. But if I wasn't allowed to call him Duck Vader, I think I would just call him Tim. Because Tim the duck sounds like a reasonable duck.
A nice duck. You can talk to him.
A duck that wouldn't give you any grief. It would just be there.
Hey, Tim.
So I struggled with this one. This came up in some training I did the other night. And I actually went with Crispy or Hussein, because you know, or King.
You'd be ordering off the menu every night, wouldn't you?
So that's where I was at with that. So
that's
it was just time. Do you know what I mean? Ducks have a lifespan.
Yeah, and I can imagine
house.
You leaning out the window, calling the duck to come and get some food, just shouting,
Crispy Duck! I think it'd be awesome. My name's Ivan, and I am the children and youth director at the church, and I get to hang out with these guys. Not as often as I'd like these days, but we do get together and cause some chaos when we do. So,
in a socially distant manner.
In a socially distant manner, although we're not socially seeing each other at all, except via Zoom. So, very safe. Very safe.
Very safe. And what lovely faces you have, might I say.
Well, thank you.
Well, Alex is sporting some really stylish glasses here today. You can't see anything.
Who said that?
I don't think I've ever seen them in glasses, so very, very stylish. There we go. You can see your eyes. Topic for today, gents. It's Mental Health Week for our kids and youth, talking about how we protect their mental health. What are some of the things that we're doing or that they can do to take some of the strain off this situation? Mental health for the adults is kind of later on in the year. I think it's May sometime. But in that kind of mental health, us trying to find ways for our kids to find coping mechanisms, the reality is, whilst we're trying to do that, some of our adults, some of our parents and carers are trying to find the space for themselves to kind of think clearly and that keeping their mental health going. Alex, I just wonder if you could speak into that as a parent for a second. You know, the challenge of, you know, finding that mental health space for your kids and then finding the time for yourself. Where's that line for you?
Well, that line is definitely one that has become harder to figure out with each lockdown. I think in lockdown one, there was a great deal of almost excitement and optimism, like we're all going on an adventure together. And it was also, the weather was a lot nicer. So you felt like you had literally physically more space that you could inhabit together. And with each subsequent lockdown, the novelty has worn off, the charm, the excitement, the adventure feeling has definitely worn off.
Yeah, yeah.
So that line has become, I think, a little harder to figure out because everything becomes a bit more of a blur. But I guess the same principles are still there, which is, at least in our house, that the sort of routine is really important, finding a routine that you stick to. Because I think that sense of certainty, at least I found with all of us, it really helps everyone to feel a little bit better because you know what's going to happen in the day. You know roughly when it's going to happen. So if we have dedicated teaching time, we know that's the dedicated teaching time for the kids. If we have downtime, we know it's downtime. And if we know that it's, you know, daddy working time, then it's daddy working time. Kind of sticking to those boundaries, those time boundaries, we found has been really helpful. But sometimes you have complicated days or things that appointments or things that, or, you know, meetings, things that change that. And I've seen that cause, you know, some uncertainty. And then that leads to tempers flaring and irritability and things like that. But definitely routine and structure, I think, has played the biggest role in helping us to stay a little bit sane.
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of some of the things that you are, kind of, so for us as our school has kind of said a few things to kind of elevate that, to say, why don't you rate how your day's looking like? So between 1 and 10, how are you feeling right now? And what color are you? And then it goes like that. And then they ask them to kind of find 3 positives in their day to start that kind of whole mental outlook on their day. If there was a color for you and your family today, Alex, and a number, what would that be? Be honest.
No, I can be really honest. No, it started off at a deep red. Everyone woke up in a foul mood this morning. I don't know if on the number scale 1 is bad or 10 is bad, but let's say 10 is bad. Then we were hitting that 11 real strong.
Oh, really?
In our stride. I think, I think within 5 or 10 minutes of us all waking up this morning, tempers were pretty hot because there was confusion about breakfast, which hadn't been made or left in the, you know, who's making what and who, you know, all these things. All the routine, which is usually so locked in, had been just totally destroyed within 5 or 10 minutes. Yeah. So we had to collectively bring that red to a kind of more mellow, you know, orangey blue, and bring that 10 right down to a 5. So yeah. I'd say within an hour, you know, breakfast had been achieved and tempers had settled down and apologies were said, which, you know, the whole restitution, that's really important if you've had a really difficult time to talk about it, especially with little ones, to explain what happened and then to say sorry and then, you know, for them to say sorry because they were pushing each other off chair, you know, all these things. And then, you know, and then like you've signed a peace treaty, you know?
Yeah.
And then everyone's, oh, cool. We know how this works.
Yeah.
And then the day has been much better since then. Really, it's been a lovely green, if that's a good color.
Yeah. I'm going
to be like, if only they'd known about the system just before World War II, things might have been avoided.
Exactly. If they'd just shown Hitler that, you know.
Green, yellow,
How are you feeling today? I think it's interesting to bring that up. I want to put a pin in that for a second and kind of sway to Rob here and say, ask, as a minister looking after adults and that mental health, and posturally, what are some of the tips that you're putting out there to, for mindful wellness, you know, what are you kind of asking guys to look off, how are you asking guys to look after themselves in this time?
It's a really good question. Funnily enough, I think for adults, it's exactly the same as children, routine. I think that's very, very important. And by routine, I don't just mean scheduling your day, but I also mean healthy routines, things that keep you sane. So, you know, the simple things like eating well, not just eating junk food and gorging out on sugars and stuff like that, because, you know, you're in lockdown and we all comfort eat. Yeah. That can be really bad for your mental health, because progressively that has lots of side effects. Also just, you know, drinking enough fluids, throughout the day, because if you're dehydrated, you don't cope well with anything in life. I also just recommend, I recommend prayer, even if you're not really a religious person. I think prayer is a great way to practice mindfulness, but it's also a way of feeling like you're not alone. And you don't have to be a religious person to be able to say, well, you know, if there's a God that's out there and he's willing to listen, I'm gonna bend his ear for a while. This is what's going on in my life. You might be really surprised by how just sort of talking about that kind of helps you, you know, just talking about your feelings with someone that's not going to spread them to anyone else. God's really good with that, you know, super confidential. So I recommend that. I also just recommend being really kind to yourself, because I think as the lockdowns have progressed and, you know, as the pandemic has gone on longer and longer and still looks to be going on for quite a while, because I don't think we've quite cracked the back of it yet. I think there's just a sense in which it is going to affect our mental health. There's no two ways about it. It's going to affect everyone. And the problem is most of us might not recognize that at first. So I think you have to be mindful about how you're feeling from day to day and how that might be changing over time. You have to listen to the feedback of others, you know, especially your family, because they're going to tell you if you're being a bit more snappy than usual or more irritable or seem to be more anxious than normal. And I think, you know, just take those warning signs seriously, because you need to respond earlier rather than later. You know, you need to make sure you get enough downtime, enough fresh air, enough time away from screens. You know, we're spending so much time in front of screens and Zoom calls and things like that now because we're all working from home. And, you know, collectively, that's not very good for us. So you need to make sure that you have enough time away from the screen, enough resting time, all that kind of stuff. Because, you know, mental health, the decline is often sort of incremental. It can be slow. And then basically just bit by bit, there's like a creep in your wellness until suddenly you're in a place where you didn't think you would be and you're really, really struggling and you didn't see it coming. But it's actually because, you know, you didn't see any of the warning signs that were there beforehand. Sleep is really important. Get plenty of sleep. Make sure that you're not staying up till ridiculous o'clock, in the morning, you know, doing whatever it is that you do late at night, playing games or watching TV or reading a book or whatever. I mean, reading a book's easier because you probably fall asleep faster. There's no screen light. But honestly, sleep is so important for our mental health. Yeah. So I know these are all quite obvious things. But actually, it's the obvious things that we often don't do that lead to trouble in terms of mental health and wellness.
Yeah. So I think you picked up on sleep there. I think as parents, that sleep thing is either a distant memory or a constant struggle, particularly if you've got a teenager and then you've got a toddler coming through and still trying to work out that sleep pattern. So sleep does affect so much of our day. Our little girl has finally cracked it, fingers crossed. But that took time. Like, that was the best part of 4 years for us before, you know, sleep became some sort of pattern in our house. And actually that's had an impact for me for longer than usual, trying to come back into that. But even now, you know, with kids unsure and unsettled on what's going on, you know, when do I go back to school? Why can't I go to nursery school? You know, will I get this? Will I catch that? So that sleep pattern is always kind of upset at the moment. So, you know, or it is such a big thing that it is, if you can get that chunk of sleep in, it does change your day dramatically. And we found that certainly in the last week, overtiredness just causes a knock-on effect, and it takes so long to get out of that. And we've only just in our house in the last couple of days coming over that. And again, because of the work thing, you know, we feel like we need to cram in all that extra time. I don't know about you guys, but like, you just seem to it just seems easy to accept a Zoom invite now, so that you can just, you know, get smash that work in or get that out of the way quickly, so you can schedule that all in. And I'm finding that actually it's time to declutter that. It's okay to say no to that call. It can be tomorrow's call. Do you know what I mean? Because my wife is a full-time teacher now and still trying to do her job full-time as well. She does need the help. You know, we're not, you know, and for her mental health and my mental health and Faith's mental health, we all need to kind of pooling together here.
And I think, you know, just picking up on that, there's a sense in which we have to learn something from this whole experience and this whole pandemic, because, you know, pre-pandemic, the culture of work in the UK was in many ways toxic for a lot of people. Mm. You know, there's a sense in which a lot of people are working some very long and hard hours, doing a lot of commuting as well. And that has a massive impact on your family life. It has a massive impact on your quality of life. So, you know, when lockdown happened, I think a lot of people were kind of for the first time asking questions about what life would look like if it looked differently. And in a sense, those are good questions to ask before it goes back to the new normal, whatever that is, because, you know, we have a once in a generation opportunity to kind of reshape what the new normal might look like.
Yeah.
And I think it has to be some kind of, you know, more hybrid approach to family and work life. It has to be more flexible than it was before, because, you know, what we were doing before didn't really work for a lot of people, but it was just the way everybody had to do it because that's the way it was done. That was the cultural norm. Mm-hmm. You couldn't exactly buck the system and say, I want to work from home when nobody works from home. And that's an unusual thing and it's difficult. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think going forward, that might be different, particularly for parents, you know, who are trying to balance, you know, juggling, taking care of kids and all that kind of thing. So I guess, you know, the first thing I would say, you know, to anybody in that kind of category now who perhaps is living in this kind of weird phase that we're in right now, where you don't quite know what the future holds and everything today is a bit different to the way that was, ask yourself those questions so that you don't just automatically by default slip back into old habits. Mm-hmm. You know, if you end up saying, well, I used to work 12 hours a day every day because that was normal for me, therefore, in lockdown, I have to do the same thing. I think that's probably going to end badly for your mental health.
Yeah.
Because you're under extra stress right now. It's not good. But even before that, before we were in the situation, it probably wasn't particularly good for you. And you might want to just kind of reevaluate that now and start having those conversations, maybe with your boss or the people in your workplace, about what life is going to look like afterwards and how, you know, what have you learned during this lockdown that might be more beneficial to you going forward?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that this has been a really great, if really unexpected, time for, I think, a lot of people to reflect and to have a look at themselves and their lives, because, hey, there's a lot more thinking time now. And there's a lot more, because obviously we're speaking as, you know, with regards to the mental health of young people who are growing up. But, you know, you've got, you know, teenagers and you've got people at college who are kind of stuck by themselves, really. And they are wrestling with a completely different problem, which is like, what do you do when you're just sort of alone and you don't have the contact you've kind of gotten so used to, which does give you a lot of time to think. And so, you know, now is a really good time, you know, to actually think about your priorities, to think about what matches to you, to think about, you know, what the future could hold for you. It's like a kind of reset button that society has been given, the opportunity to at least explore how things could be different. And, you know, I've been just kind of circling back to the sleep thing, is that, you know, why that is so important is so that you can actually dedicate the energy that you need to any of the kind of, you know, routines you want to build or things you want to change or, you know, habits you're kind of trying to give yourself or you're trying to give to your kids. It's very hard to do all that if you are just knackered, if you are just at wit's end, because then you're going to default to whatever is easiest, whatever it is, just get it done. Like the Rob was saying about, you know, eating too much sugar. Yeah, you know, like if you are super tired, man, you just want to hit those super sweet coffees, knock them back all the time, because, you know, that's the easiest, you know, possible thing. And I heard this term the other day, called revenge procrastination, which is that people stay up late because they're basically annoyed with their day. They're angry at all the endless Teams and Zoom meetings. They're angry at the homeschooling. They're just like, they're annoyed with their day because it's been so frustrating. And the way they get the revenge on the day is by staying up super late.
Yeah.
Because that's their time. So they're like and it's called revenge procrastination. You're basically just doing it so you can get your revenge on the day, which doesn't help because then you're tired and the whole thing begins again. And
But
it's a really good point, because what it illustrates is that there's an emotional response to your day and to the turmoil that you're facing. And it's a warning sign because you haven't got enough time to process those feelings. And that's one of the reasons why you stay up late, is that you are somehow trying to process the anger or the frustration of your day. But you're absolutely right. You know, if you haven't made time for that, and if you haven't kind of mitigated that during the day, you end up staying up late night after night, and it only gets worse. It's a cyclical problem. So I think it's a good observation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the science behind that is actually the sleep helps you file your day, which people don't hear. So even if you've had a bad day, your sleeping is helping you file and process your day, you know, putting that into the different areas that it needs to be, and tackle that. And to come back to the kind of biblical thing of it is, let tomorrow worry about tomorrow. You know, there's nothing you can do about tomorrow until it happens. Do you know what I mean? So let's get that sleep in and then tackle it fresh and start our day. So we have this saying in the house, well, today's happened, start again at 7. There's nothing we can do. We can only apologize for what's happened and then say, what's the learning from that? And apply that to tomorrow at 7 o'clock, when we're all generally out of bed. Well, everybody else is out of bed. I'm still catching up on my sleep.
I love the idea that you guys have such a deep sort of saying in your family. I mean, in my family, the saying of the day is put the kettle on.
Yeah.
that's pretty much the most spoken kind of, you know.
Whatever saves lives, that's what it needs to be. I wanted to kind of pick on the other side of it. I think anybody 80s, pre-80s, born in that kind of era, you were just kind of kicked outside and said, go and deal with yourself. Do you know what I mean? In the sense of, your mental health was this, you've got the outdoors, go nuts. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to really hear about that. And some of the stuff is coming back to, well, that was never, we never had to deal with that as kids. Do you know, why do you need to worry about that now? And with all the information we're getting, whether it's vaccine or school sending out information about the latest COVID stats in the area and all that sort of stuff, how do we tackle that kind of information that head on? Do you know what I mean? By saying, actually, yeah, that was a different generation. And the comment is, well, we're no worse off, so what's the problem? How do we kind of tackle that mindset, Alex?
Well, we definitely, I think, have to always look in the mirror and admit that, you know, the way we were raised and the way we were, you know, brought into this world, things were different. And it's the same with our parents. You know, they'll tell, you know, I used to listen to my parents talk about their childhood, and I was like, wow, that's so weird and different. And undoubtedly, my kids will listen to me talk about my childhood and be like, you're a weirdo, Dad. And it's important to acknowledge that, even though you were raised that way, there were good things about it, and there were things that weren't helpful or healthy about it. And I do think that we live in an age, I mean, I had a slightly different upbringing, in that my parents were very touchy-feely. They were very open about feelings, so we spoke about our feelings a lot. So that's something that I see as a good thing that they gave me, which I've been kind of able to hopefully, you know, reflect with my kids, which is that we do a lot of talking, and when they have questions, we do a lot of, you know, explaining and being honest with them and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so with the coronavirus, with COVID vaccines, with you know, because we've had losses in our family. We directly know people who've now passed away. And so explaining that and talking about that, and what does that mean? And what does it mean in the context of our family and the bigger scheme of things? What does it mean in our kind of ongoing education of how and who God is with them, you know? And you know, we read Bible stories every night, and big questions will come up, and it's important to push everything to the side immediately and focus on that big question. And so to answer your question, I think, you know, however we were raised, we do live in a different time now. And in that time, there's way more information, far more information than when we were kids. And that means that there has to be more time to explain it and more time to process it and more time to give it context, so that, because that'll be their future. Their future is going to be one of abundant information. And the best thing we can give them is how to understand it, how to filter it, how to put it into context. And that does mean more conversations, and it does mean pushing aside work and other things like that, because that is really important. That is a foundation you're building for them.
Sure.
And I think that's such an important point you make, Alex, because processing information is how we make our decisions that shape our worldview. And so, you know, when people say things like, oh, well, you know, in my day, we didn't do that and it didn't do us any harm, I don't see why we need to talk about this. The reason they do that is because they only have the information and life experience that has been available to them over the duration of their life. And most of that life took place before today. You know, tomorrow is today. You know, today is tomorrow's history. And you know, you live for long enough, after a while, there's a whole bunch of history that has informed all of your thinking and decisions. But the problem is your whole worldview is shaped by history, not necessarily up-to-date present information. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little bit like people used to believe that the world was flat. You know, I'm sure the argument continued, you know, I can't remember who it was that discovered the world was round.
Well, Copernicus and Galileo.
I wanted to say that. Thank you. But I wasn't sure. And I was like, I'm going to look stupid. So I'll just let someone else on. So anyway, I can just imagine the conversations that they had, like trying to tell people the world is round. And they were like, but, you know, in my day, the world is flat and it didn't do us any harm.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, it's the same thing. It's you always process how you view something new and new information based on old information.
Yeah.
And that's, to some extent, that's a good thing, because basically, you know, our memories are there to help us make wise decisions based on past experiences. But we have to recognize the limits of our past experience and understand that there are many, many things we haven't experienced and haven't learned and therefore have no information on.
Yeah.
And I think mental health is a beautiful example of that, because psychology, et cetera, is one of the newer sciences in the world in terms of, you know, all the different areas of medicine. But, you know, there have been incredible strides over the last 30, 40 years, and we really have learned quite a lot about how we think and feel, which is why we have much more information on mental health and its effects and more positive ways of responding to the challenges that we face, because otherwise we're all deeply affected and just don't know it.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting about this for me is we're probably one of the last of a generation that will remember things pre-Google, and that is saying a lot. And with Google being on every device that you can imagine, we're trying to part of my thinking over the next couple of months, over the years, how do I educate youth, families, on what information is good information and what information is going to cause you issue. You know, there is so much information that you can go onto Google and self-diagnose any problem that you feel you have. And with Facebook kind of spitting out information at us, what would you, if you could give a couple of tips on reading between the lines information, you know, the information that isn't going to wear you down mentally, you know, going to cause friction for yourself and family members, some of the tips that you'd be throwing out there, Rob.
It's a big question, Ivan. I think the first thing that I would always try and just, you know, emphasize is always figure out the source of the information first, because that will immediately give you a clue as to how reliable the information is likely to be. And, you know, it's really important in our day and age where there's so much free access to information that we understand that certain organizations process information differently because that's what they're set up to do. So if you look at established journalism sites, they have editors. They have people that fact check. They have people that, you know, go into huge amounts of research before they put anything online. You do not get that on Facebook. So my first tip to anybody trying to find out the information, whether information is true, is who's posting it and how do we know that they're a trustworthy source of information? Mm-hmm. How do we know that they've done the research that's required to put this up as fact? And that's really important because the reality is if you do not know the answer to that question, then you have to understand that anything you're reading may or may not be correct and you must read more widely to get a broader view. And you must keep researching because you don't have definitive proof yet. And that's not to say journalists are perfect. You know, they get things wrong too, but, you know, usually that kind of fact checking is much easier because other journalists will fact check them and go, no, that's not correct.
Yeah.
Whereas on Facebook, all you get is a bunch of people saying that's not correct, but none of them actually know what's going on. They're just arguing with each other, which is great.
So from Rob, we've got to check your source. You know, who's it coming from and what source are they sharing? Alex?
I think you should definitely decide on times in the day when you are consuming all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Because the danger with mobile phones and tablets and the like is that you're sort of on it all the time. And so it's a kind of drip drip thing. And so you're never really paying proper attention, but you're also absorbing it. So,
yeah.
But you're not processing it properly. And you're not really, you know, like Rob was saying, you're not really doing the research essentially with this flood of information. And so it's just there and it's sort of seeping into you slowly and you're not really pushing back on the things you should push back on. And so that self-discipline of saying, well, I'm not going to be doing that. I'm going to have an hour of Facebook a day or something like that.
Yeah.
And that'll give you a little bit more focus so that when you do see a weird random article telling you something ridiculous, that you can go, oh, that's ridiculous,
yeah.
And identify. So understanding that you live in a constant bombardment of information and thus putting in place the controls so that you decide, you're the one, you're not the one being, you know, shoved in. If you're deciding, nope, this is when I watch TV, this is when I use the internet. And that way it gives you, I would imagine, you know, at least in my experience, that would give you a better sense of processing and understanding.
Yeah.
What is happening? I agree with Rob. I think that's such an important, that truth thing, because we don't live in an age where generally it's accepted that there is such a thing as proper truth. It's very subjective. Oh, that's your truth.
Yeah.
That's your opinion. And so this anti-authority mindset of saying, but scientists, whatever, you know, the experts, whatever. Ignore them. That's not important. It's a really strong part of our culture, in Western culture, especially Western culture. We are extremely anti-expert, anti-knowledge, anti-science, anti-science, all that stuff. And that's a tough one.
Yeah. Rob, you had something to add.
Yeah.
Yes, I've temporarily forgotten it.
So whilst he's thinking about that, I think it's such a great thing that you hit on that. I think again, it ties, Alex, what you're saying, it ties back into the, it did us no harm thing. Do you know what I mean? Well, that wasn't around when we were growing up. You just got on with it. You just spat into some dirt and rubbed it into the skin. So just get on with your day. Do you know what I mean? And actually that's the kind of stuff we're trying to break, aren't we? Like there is time to get on, but actually when you're reading stuff and this information is coming, there is a time to go, actually is that really what's being said? Which for parents who aren't getting sleep, I would put myself on a limb saying, if you're not sleeping, don't pick up Facebook, because you're going to read into stuff that isn't going to mentally help you deal with that. You're going to scroll and you're going to see that, oh, yeah, that's why we shouldn't be doing that. And that's why the vaccine's out to kill us. And blah, 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 blah. Actually, take the time, you know,
you know, like you say, I'm going to do Facebook for an hour today, you know, and that's the time that I have. And I'm going to be able to sit going through, oh, that's why they're saying that about the vaccines, and that's why they're saying this about the vaccines, and be able to process it for yourself. Rob Scott coming back in with his thought.
Yes, very important. So point number three is don't just listen to people who agree with you. That's so important. Don't just read magazines or articles or newspapers that agree with your current perspective. And there's such a danger there, because I think sometimes we do that without even thinking about it. The reason is we don't understand how things like social media work, even search engines work. Basically, they filter content based on what you look at the most and what you, you know, what they perceive to be your likes, your dislikes, and they tailor content for you according to that. That's pretty much how the algorithms work, which means that if you start kind of researching one side of an argument, you will always see more arguments for that side of the argument. And that's extremely dangerous, because it basically reinforces an idea without any objective source of information saying, no, actually there's a different way of looking at that. And I think when it comes to, you know, information and information age that we live in, it needs to be ingrained in us that we begin to learn that we have to listen to voices that say things that are different to what we think. Even if they're wrong, we need to hear their arguments, because otherwise we will never change our mind on anything. We will just dig our heels in, kind of support one camp and say, you know, whatever comes, these people are right. And the moment you sort of decide that before you read what they write, you're in trouble, because they can basically write anything and you'll believe it, and then you're just hoodwinked.
And it's also important to understand why you're using the whatever it is that you're using, whether you're using Facebook or whatever. Because Facebook is there to connect people, and that's it. That's its job. What it is trying to do is to give you news and to give you all kinds of other things. It's not there for that. It's one good job, it's as a tool, is to connect people. Catch up with friends, catch up with family, see what your family are doing if you live in different parts of the world. Really good at that. Fantastic. No better system than Facebook for that. What is terrible at it? News. Science, truth, any of the things that are really important for you. Even your spiritual, whatever. It's not, that's not what it's there for. Unless you obviously join us on Andover Baptist Church Facebook page, where you get the good stuff. But generally speaking, you shouldn't be going to Facebook. You get the answers to the big questions in life. That's not it. It is really good connecting.
Or Google for that matter. I mean, wow, there's a lot of opinions out there. You know, this is what Christians believe. And, you know, if you read 7 or 8 articles, you'll find they all say something different. That's because it's not that simple.
And that connection aspect, you would think we're all in lockdown. We can't see each other physically, but here are all these wonderful tools. We should all be feeling more connected. And in a way we do, absolutely. But you have to remember why you're using those things. It's just for the connection, not for the other stuff. The other stuff is what drains you. The other stuff is what feels you feeling angry, or like, oh my goodness, I can't believe people. And you become a bit of a keyboard, you know, warrior in both senses of the word. And that's not what it's there for. And I find in any given day, my, you know, you're talking about the colors and the numbers. My kind of way of measuring that is how connected I feel, both with the people in my house and the people outside of my house, you know, the people I work with or friends and family. The more connected I feel, then the better the color, the better the number, because I just feel closer to people. And so finding time in the day with my kids where I can connect with them properly, even if that's at the sacrifice of work, is more important, because 10 minutes on a bed reading a story with one kid, because I know that means so much to them, or 10 minutes sitting quietly and playing with the other one, because that means more to them, means we've had that connection. And for their mental health and my mental health, everything has just gotten better.
And I think as we kind of, we're going to draw to a close on that point, you know, I think that we are in a time where we can legitimately do that, where we've got the best time/excuse to do that now. So let's live in that moment, even as adults who don't have children or, you know, are maybe alone. Actually, taking the time away from work, that 10, 15 minutes of, I'm just going to just gather my thoughts here. You know, I'm just going to make that cup of tea. That's okay. You know, that is okay to do now, to take that, because we're not having those water cooler conversations. We're not able to kind of catch up now in the office, are we? So we're constantly just filling our time. But if we could just, you know, take that 10 minutes, that 15 minutes and just de-stress and unplug from the screen, you know, put the phone away for 15 minutes and just have a cup of tea, you know, pick up the book that you've been trying to read for the last however long and just start it, you know, and just, you know, mentally change that way. For parents, the same thing, you know, again, that 10, 15 minutes, dedicated to your child is what's actually going to make or break the morning or the afternoon, because actually they've got 15 minutes of dedicated time from you, and that will set them up for the day or the rest of the day and going, actually, mom, dad, carer, present here, loving that, you know, I'm going to soak that all up. Mom and dad can go off for another hour and a half, smash out that project, that assignment, and get ready for lunch. And we can all, you know, have that dedicated time again and just slotting that in. So yeah, I think some really great stuff there, guys. Thanks for your insight and all of that. So what we usually do on our podcast, a fail for the week, we usually say a parenting fail for the week. So what is your fail for the week this week? If you could sum it up in less than a minute, what would be the one thing that you go, yeah, I could have, it's the funniest, worst thing that could have happened to us. So I'll kick us off because I can see the juices kicking here. So yesterday was, this was a fail on my part. So Christy's teaching, doing the whole school thing with our daughter. And everybody's kind of done tools for the day. And my daughter has taken it upon herself to be my wife's shadow. Like literally it's like glue. So she's working out yesterday and she came into the kitchen. And just in that moment of, I just need you to be sympathetic with me kind of conversation, she's like, she's just on top of me. I don't know what to do. She's just on top of me. And my response was, why are you shouting at everybody? And from there, it was a tailspin to disaster. And in terms of it set the mood, set the mood for our dinner table conversation. So funny now, because we both kind of took the time yesterday evening to go, oh yeah, I didn't hear that properly. And it kind of unplugged from there. So that was my fail for the week, not being as sympathetic as I could have been to my wife's poor plight. Anybody else?
I mean, definitely, because it's fresh, is me forgetting to get my son's breakfast ready last night because caused just so much chaos this morning. It just, you know, yeah, that was my fail.
Yeah. What's yours, Rob?
I don't know. I feel like it's too early in the week for me to have recognized how much I've done wrong. My brain is still not in processing mode where I've gone, huh, that's on fire because of me. So that'll probably kick in around Thursday afternoon, Friday, and then I'll have this deep sense of regret going out of my week.
Come out of the staff meeting tomorrow. So from me, Ivan, thanks for joining us, gents, Alex and Rob from the Pandemic Pastoral Podcast, guys. Check them out. You can check all our stuff out on the Kids and Youth page as well. If there's anything you ever need, give us a shout. Any one of these podcasts, we'd love just to hear from you. Support you however we can. Give a shout out, and we'd love to catch up with you. So from us, we're going to wave at each other. Nobody else can see us. We're going to say goodbye.